Well, every month, David Bacher from Corian Capital decodes the previous month for us. And I cannot remember when last we had such an exciting potential conversation as the one we're going to have today, where we look back on November. The Trump trade, the surge in U.S. markets, American Pax Americana is back, or so they think. We'll find out from David exactly what happened to investments that were in America and outside. So there we go, David. We've had fireworks. There was no Guy Fawkes Day in America, but they certainly did have fireworks on the 5th of November. And here we are on with a new president coming in, and just about every asset class that is related to the United States going stronger and stronger. Now, you've been around long enough to know that everything moves in cycles. Is this a cycle that is now at its zenith, or is it still building?
We think it's close to its zenith. These things can go on for much longer than you expected. It certainly is the case in terms of our expectations. But at Corian, we always go and look at valuations, and valuations are on the US market very, very stretched, and you can get cheaper earnings for what you're paying for shares elsewhere. So we certainly are, if anything, moving more away from the United States than into what has certainly been an exceptionally strong U.S. performance.
You made a good point there, David, and maybe we can extrapolate on it very briefly. You are, when you're investing in shares, buying the earnings or the profits that that company is generating for you. And $1 of profits in the United States is the same as $1 in profits in China or $1 of profits in South Africa. And so if you have to pay a premium, depending on where you're getting that dollar of profits from, it's got to be pretty well. First of all, it can't be too big a premium. And secondly, it's got to be pretty well based. And I guess at the moment, the United States, there's a strong argument to say that you're paying far too much for a dollar of profits there than elsewhere in the world.
Correct. I think people on the other side of that argument will argue that the growth or the expected growth in earnings 1 year, 3 years, 5 years in the United States will be higher. Therefore, they can justify paying a premium for the earnings that they're buying. But you know, when you're looking down the line and you're looking at forecasted earnings, you're taking a lot of assumptions into account and a lot of forecast risk. So what we do at Corian is try and have a more normalized earnings outlook. And on the basis of our normalized earnings outlook, we still think that the premium that you're paying for the U.S. market relative to other markets is substantial and warrants an underweight position to the United States. And certainly I have been beating that drum for the last few months, and so far I have been proven wrong. But these things can snap back quickly. So for our investors, we're certainly not following the steam train and actually moving in a different direction.
So let's just understand that David is not talking in isolation. The Financial Times of London today gave us some figures, and they show that that the United States is 27% of global GDP, but at the moment, 70% of investable assets are there. So if you think of that, it's nearly three times the valuation of the country's economic generation to the assets that you are paying for. As always, David and his team at Corian put together a wonderful presentation. I think if Donald Trump could see the picture that you gave us that's on screen right now, I know people who are listening to the podcast can't see this, but you've got a thin Donald Trump dressed up like James Bond, and David's team are calling him President 0047, pity about the four in between. And his name, the name is Bond, Jammer Bonds. What the heck are you talking about here?
We obviously missed the mark. So it was actually a player on Afrikaans, Jammer Bonds. So the name is Bond, Jammer Bonds. Jammer Bonds. So obviously, President 0047's rhetoric around tariffs is what we're having a play at here. And, you know, tariffs are like special taxes that the government puts on goods coming from other countries. And when these goods arrive at a country's border, businesses have to pay an extra charge. And unfortunately, this cost doesn't just disappear and it gets passed on to consumers like you and me. So the Yammer bonds, the sorry bonds, is really a play at potential inflationary concerns down the line. And as you know, the sticking with the James Bond theme, the villain of inflation is the bond market. So hence the title, the name is Bond, Yammer Bonds. President 0047 was our lead for this month's report.
Well, don't judge everybody on my limited understanding of the explanation there. I get this part, this headline, shaken, not stirred, all about, it was a Bitcoin November.
It was a Bitcoin November, and that goes, I think Bitcoin was up 35%. It's just truly remarkable. But I think the other big driver of the markets, probably the most important driver, was the strong US dollar. And America is shaking the world's economy, and the strength of the dollar after Trump's election can largely be explained by expectations of favorable economic policies and potentially high interest rates. And a strong US dollar is certainly good for some parts of the investing world, and certainly if you're a US investor, but it does create problems for other countries. So virtually across the board, if you convert equity returns into US dollars, there were some headwinds.
He's so combative, isn't he? He now has threatened South Africa and every other member of BRICS with 100% tariffs, 100% tariffs, if we don't drop, or BRICS doesn't drop, the idea of an alternative currency to the US dollar. I mean, it's real bully tactics. Or maybe it's just a negotiating position. One never knows.
Yeah, I think you got it. I read somewhere you got to take Trump very seriously, but not literally. So you never quite know if it's a negotiating tactic. But yes, it's certainly not great for South Africa if he's going to continue with implementing those thoughts.
But an extraordinarily good month for US stocks.
It's exceptional. I read somewhere that this is, if you, the market in America is up 58% since the end of 2002. It is probably the biggest return since 1998, the dot-com bubble, two-year return. So the market has been exceptionally strong for the US. And as you said earlier, the US is the large majority of global equities in terms of its benchmark weighting. So if you're an offshore investor and you were invested in an indice or more directly into the United States, you would be smiling.
2022, not 2002, I'm sure you meant, David. In other words, in
thank you, Alex.
Correct. I keep making those mistakes all the time. 58% since 2002, not so good, but since 2022 is awesome. And Elon Musk, government efficiency. I heard today on the FT news briefing that lawyers in America, in Washington, are sending out their CVs as never before. People in the Justice Department and various other departments to the private sector firms saying, please, we need a job. We think that Elon's going to fire us.
Yes. I mean, I'm personally not supportive of everything that Mr. Musk says, but I've certainly got a lot of admiration for him. And if you just think about having that kind of role where you're in charge of a Department of Government Efficiency in South Africa, and what implementing new technologies and processes and making sure there's less waste in the system, how a country like South Africa could benefit. So, having that person going to probably the most capitalistic country in the world looking for efficiencies, you can think if we have that kind of skill sets here, what the outcome and favorable outcome for our markets could be.
Well, Rob Herzog has put his hand up. He said he will do the Elon Musk job here. In fact, no, he said afterwards, doesn't have to because you got Gaten McKenzie. Just give him the power. But if you have a look at I think it's 20 people or 19 people who are now on the economic board that Cyril Ramaphosa has just appointed, not one of them are business people. Not a single business person, all academics and bureaucrats, and they're not good at firing. So, and unfortunately, that's the only way that you can win in this thing, in a doge or Department of government efficiency is by getting rid of people. Anyway, it is what it is. We will continue to dream here in South Africa. As far as South African investments have performed in the past month?
I think the standout was macro event was the low inflation, and inflation dropped to 2.8% in October. This is the lowest since 2020. So I've got my numbers right this time. That's very good for our bond market, very good for potentially interest rates coming down further. And that fueled our bond market. Our bonds was up 3% for the month, and I think it's up close to 20% for 12 months. So an exceptional return if you're investing in South African bonds. And if you have to go back a year ago before the elections, you know, people were really running away from bonds. So these things can change quickly if you have favorable outcomes, which I think there is a lot of tailwinds for South Africa at the moment. And you're seeing that in interest rate sensitive investments. On the other side of that coin was, unfortunately, the resource sector, which was down almost 7%. And that detracted from an equity market, which ended up the month down almost 1%.
David, why are resources under so much pressure?
I think resources, a strong dollar hasn't helped for those people who are trying to buy resources. There is fears of tariffs and what its impact could be on the economy. So everyone thinks about tariffs in terms of its impact on inflation. But what's probably something to actually consider, which is even a greater impact, is what's its impact on growth, on global growth. And global growth, when you're having a world that is not trading, that has a direct impact on the resources market and the pricing of resources. So you saw gold come under pressure, platinum has been under pressure for a long time. So certainly lack of growth or growth concerns in the world leads to lower commodity prices, which impacted our resources sector.
As far as the best performers on the JSE were concerned, it has not been a bad month for retailers.
Correct. I saw yesterday that new vehicle sales was up 8%, its strongest percentage growth for a number of months. So things, as I said earlier, are looking better for South Africa. And you add the expectations of decreasing interest rates, that bodes well for interest rate sensitive shares, like I said. So Mr. Price and Pepkor came out with good earnings, and they led the biggest shares in terms of returns, both being up in the mid-teens. And that was certainly consistent with a lot of retail returns that we saw during the month of November.
And on the way down, not surprisingly, dominated by resources stocks.
Correct. It wasn't really significant news. It was just back to the global theme of resources and commodity prices being under pressure. And that impacted, Sibanye, Harmony, Northern. And you must remember, Northern was up the most the previous month. So these kind of shares are very leveraged against commodity prices and also the dollar. So any big moves in those two factors will lead to a loss of volatility in the share prices, and that's what we saw this month.
This story that I get kept hearing from money managers, professionals like yourself, called reversion to the mean. Is there a case for that now on the resources sector?
Yeah, sure. So reversion on the mean with respect to resources is quite an interesting debate. Some people that I know who are rate highly in the industry actually think you should be buying resources when they're very expensive. And you'll think that's counterintuitive, but their logic is that it's very expensive because you're generally buying them when the commodity prices are at an all-time low. So you're catching it on at the low of the earnings base. So it depends on what you're saying, reversion to the mean, in terms of what we think in terms of how we look at resources. Is we know that over a long period, everyone does need resources. And You're talking about copper, iron ore, et cetera. You can maybe argue the need for platinum is diminishing, but generally the basic resources everyone does need, and these share prices do go in long-term cycles. So if you're looking through the noise, and you know you've got a commodity that is in demand over time, and you see these share prices come back 20-30%, then we will see it as a buying opportunity.
I've been one of those, almost a minority of one, it seems, at the moment, who has been salivating at the low Sasol share price. But Si Jacobs put the other point of view. He said, you know, when you've got a bad business model and when a lot of your cash that you generate has to be pushed straight back into maintenance because you have to keep the factories going, says that there's no price that is low enough for a company like that. So I've kind of held off. But Sasol has been a favorite among many South African investors for a long, long time. Hundreds of thousands of South Africans own it. So what's your take on that stock in particular?
It's a difficult one to call because it's driven by factors that, you know, are not directly linked to the company. So, you know, the Sasol share price is affected by obviously operational issues and a heavy debt, which they are in control of, but also fluctuating oil prices and global economic conditions. So that's the hard part. So very sensitive to what's happening in the oil price and global growth, and that's a bit beyond its control. And though oil prices has been under pressure, so they've been a victim of that. But I would agree with Sa, there are some direct own goals, so to speak, with regards to operational issues and also environmental concerns with regards to Sasol. So it's one of those shares that, you know, is going somewhere, and it's going somewhere quickly. It's going to be a volatile ride, and you can easily be proven right or wrong because how sensitive this share is to just on operating factors and global economic conditions.
And so which way would you, if you had to take a bet, which way would you go?
We actually long Sasol. We've been buying it as it's been falling. So we've been not aggressively buying, but you know, every time it's been going a bit low, we've been adding to our position. We've changed it from an underweight position now to an overweight position. And that's based on the fact that we do think that in the fullness of time, oil prices will stabilize, and the amount of gearing you can get from uptick in the oil price and relative to its current valuations, we think this there's a lot more upside than downside.
Well, that's the end of our November discussion, David, and what a month it was. Do you remember any month quite like this in the recent past?
You know, the investing world always keeps you on your toes. So I can't think of a month that hasn't been something that you think, okay, well, gee whiz, you didn't expect that. That is the nature of investing. So maybe the degree of which the one market, specifically the US, ran relative to other markets was surprising. But there's always surprises in this investment world. So, you know, that's why as an investor, you should always diversify. You should always know that what you think you know is one thing, but there's always hidden risks and things you don't know. So no, to answer your question, you know, last month that didn't surprise me. We knew the US elections was going to be a pivotal event for the market where certain sectors were going to run and certain sectors and countries were going to pull back. At the time of going into the market, people were calling it a 50-50 race. It was far from that race, and hence, when you have an outcome that was contrary to expectations, shouldn't be surprised when things move quite quickly.
The Economist's year, word of the year is kakistocracy. In other words, I don't know if you've come across that, kakistocracy. It's when you have people in positions of power who are not necessarily the best qualified for them. And they say that this is the word for the year because of the people that Trump has put into those positions of power. And of course, the Trump supporters will say It's completely the other side. It's a meritocracy for the first time in ages. What's your call?
So it's entertaining for one. Doesn't really answer your question, but it certainly is entertaining. Look, I think, I mean, he's a colorful character. I don't think I'm skilled enough to go through everyone's background and history of policy voting. But, you know, what you can rely on Trump, and, you know, obviously I don't really like everything that comes out of his mouth, is that he will get things done. He is pro-business. Unfortunately, he's very pro-America. So I suppose, you know, if you outside the world like we are, you know, I think people should be a little bit nervous. But if you're an electorate and you're living in the US, I can see his appeal. He is pro-capitalism. He comes up with a story. He's very popular in his rhetoric. So I think from US voter point of view, as I said earlier, I can see his appeal. Unfortunately, I think we're at the knife edge of his policies.
David Bacher is the Chief Investment Officer at Corient Capital. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.